When you watch a movie about zombies taking over the planet, you could be just having a good time. Or you could be working out your existential angst and underlying sense of despair. Eugene Thacker teaches media studies at the New School in New York, and he's also the author of In the Dust of This Planet, Horror and Philosophy, Volume 1. In it, he argues that our world is increasingly unthinkable, and that it makes sense to look at the horror genre for help, since horror and philosophy have so much in common. As Thacker told Dan Strangechamps,
the boundary between the natural and the supernatural, for instance, which is an age-old boundary that's inherited largely from classical cultures, but also obviously from the history of religion. This is an ongoing interest both in horror and in philosophy. And fundamentally, what that's about is the question of whether the world around you, the world into which we're sort of thrown, is it? Is the world what you see, what you get? Or is there something else that's sort of beyond appearances or beneath the surface, either in terms of a deeper meaning for an individual or in terms of sort of sensing that there is a place for an individual or for humanity generally in the world?
Is the world safe because we can see what's there, or is the world terrifyingly unknown? There's a famous remark Stephen King made once, I think. He said, horror is the reason we don't like to sleep with our feet hanging out of the bed. It's about that fear of the unknown.
That phrase, the fear of the unknown, interestingly, is the definition that the American author H.P. Lovecraft gives to a tradition that he calls supernatural horror.
You mentioned Lovecraft. There's a famous short story by H.P. Lovecraft, which you write about a bit in your book, and I think expresses some of what we're talking about. It's the one called From Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe that one?
Yeah, it involves this sort of mad scientist type character that creates a strange device. Lovecraft doesn't give it even a very detailed description of what this device is, but supposedly it enables a person to see what normally we cannot see, even into other dimensions. And Lovecraft here is very much influenced by quantum physics and relativity and stuff, which he was very interested in. As with many of Lovecraft's stories, what happens is that invariably the character goes mad, he goes crazy, because it's not something that the human being is built for, that kind of reception. And there's some great scenes where the character describes seeing these strange quasi-creatures that seem to have bodies, but that they're translucent, and they seem to even pass through him because they're from another dimension or something. So Lovecraft, in stories like that, is almost taking up quantum physics and then plopping it down into genre horror, and then you see what happens when he does that.
Well, I think the really creepy part about that story is Lovecraft's vision of this other world that's filled with these things that are sort of floating and misty and oozing. You know, there's nothing really definite. Why is that so horrifying?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting if you go back and if you just think about horror film and you look back at the history of horror film and the way that monsters or creatures are represented, there's something about the formless that seems to hit a nerve with many people. In part, it could be because philosophers such as Aristotle tell us that life is defined by form and being formed and having a boundary and an outline.
Well, speaking of ooze, that reminds me of another really sinister story that you write about. This one's by Fritz Lieber, and it's called Black Gondolier. Can you describe that one?
He does something very interesting in Black Gondolier. He imagines that oil is actually a kind of sentient entity, and that instead of human beings using oil for all these years as a source of energy, oil has actually been utilizing human beings for its own unknown sort of intentions and uses. And there's one character in that book who is fairly unreliable. He's sort of an autodidact and a little bit crazy and lives out by the oil fields all by himself. And he's a little bit paranoid, but has drawn together all these different branches of knowledge from the occult to physics and has come up with this revelation or this theory about oil as using human beings, actually. And Lieber wrote this, you know, a long time ago, but it's quite prescient today given our own global context.
Right. I think maybe the terrifying notion there is is this notion that the world is really not about people. It's this very anti-humanistic notion. We walk around thinking we're the center of everything, but what if, in fact, we're nothing and the world has a whole different center? It could be other creatures or other beings are controlling us, or just that the world goes on without us and we are nothing.
Yeah, it's a really difficult thought, I think, to wrap one's head around. But I would also argue it's a really commonplace thought. All of us, each of us as individuals, have hopes and desires, and we do things to try to achieve certain ends. But all of us, even the most extreme control freak, knows that sometimes it just doesn't work out. There are things that are not in your control. And I think that those sorts of everyday feelings maybe that people have is something that is enhanced or magnified or maximalized in supernatural horror. To think about, well, what if the world is not simply the world in our image, which would be an anthropomorphic kind of view of the world, but also that the world is not made for our use and benefit, which is more an anthropocentric view, so that natural resources exist simply so that we can use them. And it's also even different from a misanthropic view. You know, I mean, there's also the view that the world hates us or it's against us or human beings are the enemy of the world. Even that's still a little bit humanistic because it's sort of like saying, at least the world takes enough to take notice, even though it doesn't like us.
Right. We matter.
Yeah, we matter, or the world notices. Writers like Lovecraft evoke this other alternative, which is really about indifference, or the world as anonymous or impersonal, or almost sort of indifferent to the things we try to do to change it or to mold it to our desires. And I think that's ultimately the real hard thing to think through.
So I have to ask you, what's the benefit to this kind of thinking? I mean, is there any way in which you can or you do use this to go through our lives?
Yeah, that's a question that comes up frequently when I give talks. And it's a difficult question because part of the project for me is also maybe asking us to re-examine how we think about these sorts of things, whether it's philosophy or horror or what have you, in the sense that we often, when we see something like this, want to know, how can it help me, or what should I do with it? And really that's sort of asking, how can I use that to attain a certain end or help me get through this? While I think you can do that, I also want to ask, is that the only way of looking at these kinds of works, whether they're examples in horror or philosophy? Particularly in philosophy, there's often that sort of question asked or that demand, and almost in a therapeutic or even a self-help kind of way, like, how can this help me get through this particular issue? And I think there are examples in philosophy that address that. But I also feel like philosophy and horror as well, I mean, they ask more questions than they provide answers. And in fact, they make things worse usually because they make you realize you've been assuming these things all along that have no ground, for instance. And they're often like crisis-inducing more than problem-solving endeavors. But, you know, the question is there a value in that? And I don't know. I think that there is. And I think especially now, given that we are constantly encouraged to think about events on a global scale, but also on a non-human scale. These are areas, philosophy and horror, that might give us some ideas about how to do that.
You mean how to imagine a world in which the monster doesn't die?
Either how to imagine a world in which the monster doesn't die, how to imagine a world in which maybe there's no difference between us and the monster, how to imagine a world in which maybe just the world itself is a monster, or maybe being existing itself is a monster, or I don't know. I mean, how to think around these sorts of limits that are really absolute limits. They're not necessarily relative kind of limits.
Eugene Thacker is the author of In the Dust of This Planet, Horror and Philosophy, Volume 1. He spoke with Anne Strainchamps.